Midnight in Karachi with Mavish Marad on tour.com. Today, my guest is writer James Smythe, whose previous novels are The Testimony, The Explorer, The Machine, The Echo, No Harm Can Come to a Good Man, and now the first of his young adult trilogy is Way Down Dark. It's a fantastic story about a young woman's attempt at surviving life in a violent society aboard a spaceship. That's the only home that she's ever known. James, welcome to Midnight in Karachi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm warm. I believe so are you today.
So warm. Yeah, it's like 35 degrees here. So
yeah, add on a bunch of that to that. But yeah, we're not. Let's not talk about the weather. Today is a warm day for many people. Let's put it that way. But now, congratulations on the new book. It's really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I'm really keen, as I was just saying, to read more of the trilogy. You've not written young adult before this, young adult novels before this. Tell me why you chose to make this shift, or you know, did the story just present itself to you in this way?
Yeah, totally just the story. I had a gap in between editing books. This is one of those things where I'm interested in stuff like this and other people might not be. So I apologize if you're listening to this and you're like, Jesus, the order of things in which they're written is not necessarily interesting. But so this was written quite a while ago. I wrote this between... I was waiting for edits on, I believe, The Machine and The Echo at the same time. They were being edited by different editors, and I said to my agent at the time, I don't want to stop writing, I need to write something else now, and I just want to write something that in no way affects my other writing, so it doesn't interrupt other publishing things. It's just a fun little side project for me to do. And he said, oh, what have you got, you know? And I said, oh, I've got this idea about this The pitch at the time was teenage girl being Batman on a spaceship full of Mad Max bad guys. And he was like, oh, go away and do that. and I wrote the first draft of it in about a month while I was waiting for these edits. And then it basically it got reworked. And it was a case where the story was... I didn't know what it was when I wrote it, as in I didn't know it was a young adult novel. All I knew was that I'm friends with a lot of young adult writers, Will Hill and James Dawson and Amy Allward and Kim Curran, like people that I really love and I'm close to. And I'd read a lot of their books around that period in time. And I feel a bit like they sort of rubbed off on me, in that I thought, oh, I've got this interesting story, this potentially interesting story with a younger protagonist. So I wasn't setting out to go, I think I need to write a YA novel. It was more a case of, yes, the story required that she, the main character Chan, in this place in her life, happened to be 17. And I think that you have to bring a lot of sensibilities of the young adult book marketplace to a novel when you're writing back characters that age.
Now, you've told me what the premise was. I was going to ask you about that, but you've just said it was a young woman being Batman on a spaceship, which is fantastic. And now that I think about it, it makes complete sense, because I was going to talk to you about Chan, the protagonist of Way Down Dark. She's not perfect. She's not special. But as we were saying earlier, she's got a lot of issues herself that she's trying to sort of work through. Let's put it that way, without giving much away.
I think we can quite comfortably say that on the first page of the book, she kills her mother.
There you go.
Which is a thing which is probably going to make you feel bad about yourself.
It obviously has made her feel, you know, various things that she has to deal with. Lots of things. So these issues that she has to work through, and of course being in this sort of broken down society. Although I guess in a way, what I found interesting about the society on the ship that is called Australia, was that though society is broken down in terms of what we recognize to be civilization, it is quite structured in its own way.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's got its own systems. In many ways, it replicates our own sort of rather more... It's not a democratic culture, but there are certainly what I would call the equivalent of political parties in there. There are, you know, three main groups vying for power, essentially, of this ship. And there are shops and people can go shopping. And there are, to some extent, hospitals, and there are, you know, places you don't go and places you do go, and there is work. People do work. It's just a sort of trade and barter system rather than being cash. But it's, yeah, it does have a reflection of our social structure, certainly.
Yeah. It's not anarchy, is what I'm saying on the ship. It's not complete chaos.
It's not total anarchy, no.
I love how you throw in they can go shopping like it's really that casual. Let me warn you, people who are listening, it's not that bright and cheery. It's great, but it's not that bright. Go shopping.
It's not like a visit to Primark.
Actually, if you think about it, certain visits to Primark do become a bit apocalyptic.
It can happen.
Like I've seen it myself.
But right, still, it's not like going into like an Anthropology where it's nice and air conditioned and there's like seats and someone might go, do you want a cup of tea or something? And you're like,
It isn't that kind of shopping at all. I love this comparison of Chan with Batman because I hadn't thought about it before. She is like Batman, far from perfect, but she ultimately believes that what she's doing is the right thing.
Totally.
Which is, you know, kind of what he did as well, because he did some ridiculous things, but he did think he was always doing the right thing.
We're talking about him like he's a real person.
Yeah, you know him.
When Batman was alive...
Well, you and I both know who he really is, right? We know his secret identity, totally, so it's all cool. Yeah. I mean, not to tell anyone else, but, you know, just between us. But I love that she's got all these issues. She's trying to work through them, but ultimately she believes that she is doing the right thing. And sometimes she's really frustrating, and sometimes it's so obvious that right thing she's doing is not the most advisable thing in terms of survival, in terms of survival of the fittest, but it is undeniably the right thing. Now, when you started writing Way Down Dark, was she present from the very start? Was she sort of the anchor all throughout your many drafts?
Pretty much. She was, she was there the whole way through. She and Agatha actually were there the whole way through. I think, if memory serves, it wasn't always there that she killed her mother, which again, I know is not a spoiler if it's on the first page, but that wasn't a constant. I'm trying to remember the very first draft now, but she and Agatha, who is a sort of her mother's best friend / partner, who sort of helped look after Chan from a sort of overseeing point of view now that her mother's gone. She's almost like the Alfred character. But if Alfred was like a 60-year-old woman who kicked unbelievable amounts of ass
instead of just bringing tea,
really, really good with knives.
Yeah,
if that was Alfred, she was there from the beginning. I think the very first thing, as I say, was the Batman thing, and I knew that I'm pretty much obsessed with the film Alien and the film Aliens.
Yeah.
And Ripley, and I knew that I wanted her to have more than a fragment of the sort of the Ripley nature. I mean, there is a character in the book that I think is a pretty overt reference to Newt and the relationship that Ripley has with Newt.
Right.
And I wanted that there, but without it being maternal as well. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. You'll get that when you read the book. She was there the whole time. Yeah, definitely. She's been a crux of the... And she's the driving force for the reason that there is a trilogy. I think some people think that when you say I'm doing a trilogy, they think it's because, you know, that's what books come in, like that's a fully formed package, or for monetary reasons, which is completely crazy. The reason that there's a trilogy is because there's a pleasing narrative arc towards the growth the character shows over three things. You know, everything runs in threes. And I know where I want Chan to end. And she had to hit sort of, it's a three-act story where Chan ends, and it's a long story. So she's been the driving force between everything for all the books so far.
Well, that's interesting, because we've gone from Batman to Ripley, and I can totally see Agatha as a kind of a, you know, older Ripley, and I can see Chan growing into a Ripley. So now I'm just gonna have to read everything all over again, keeping Batman and Ripley in mind. Thank you for that. I don't want to scare off readers who feel that they may need some element of romance in their books, because there isn't any in Way Down Dark. Don't let that stop you from reading. But often a lot of young adult readers or fans in young adult books are thought of as needing an element of romance, no matter what the genre is, because of course young adult is not a genre in itself.
There's a tiny bit.
But what I'm wondering is, did you consider that at all?
Yeah, I mean,
there's a suggestion of it, but there isn't a romance. There isn't really, it hasn't really gone there. Yet.
No, no.
Yet. Let's put it that way.
Well, yet. What I really...
I'm not asking any further. I just want to know about now.
No, that's fine. What I really wanted to do... It's a toughie, right? Because, I mean, obviously, I've never been a teenage girl. This is number one thing.
That is a revelation.
Which led to, editor, Anne, led to a whole thing. Because I think her frustration with some of it was... try and think like a teenage girl. And I was like, well, I try. My thing is that I feel like if you've got a more interesting, driven direction in what you think you should be doing with your life, I don't think you get waylaid that easily by the opposite sex or the same sex, whichever, you know. But I think that there's an element of romance is somehow something that a lot of young adult books front load as a major distraction, like the main character is on a path, but then romance happens, right, and oh no, craziness ensues and that path is somehow lost. Do you know what I mean? And then yeah, they find their way back to it with the help of the romance. And I was like, well, but can't the romance be like this little side distraction thing that, like, in almost like in another world, maybe this would have been something, but otherwise, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, and you've got bigger problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've got much bigger problems, so maybe focus on those. It's why I'm not going to be nasty about other books because that's not a thing. So in a book that I quite like, The Hunger Games, I feel a bit like one of Katniss's, one of the things I don't like about Katniss is how willing she is to be like, oh, but I'm crushing on you so hard. And I want her to just be like, but also, don't die.
Yeah.
You're in this thing. Don't die. Try and help people. Don't die. Stop fancying the boy. Don't die. Like, I don't necessarily buy that. So, I wanted to reflect that a little bit.
Well, you did a good job. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah.
All right, so now Way Down Dark is mostly told from Jan's perspective, but there are a few chapters from the point of view of Agatha, the other person we were talking about, who is kind of a maternal figure to Jan once her mother dies. This is an interesting balance. There are very few chapters from Agatha, but while I found myself wanting to know more about Agatha and sort of the past of what had happened before we sort of come into the picture and meet them,
yeah.
At the same time, I mean, those few chapters did give me a lot of information while sort of teasing for more. She seems to have survived the ship for so long. And so while I really enjoyed those chapters about her past, I mean, I did keep wanting to, you know, what was her story when she was much younger? Where was she born here? Of course she was born here because it's been generations, but what was her childhood like and all the rest of it? This balance between the two voices, the two points of view, how did you figure that out?
It was, I will give you two completely different answers, both of which are true. One is that I really wanted to tell more of the past of the ship because as I built the world up of the ship, and you know, there are reveals and stuff about the ship that come out as the book goes on, I was like, actually, some of this is really interesting. And I thought for a long time about, could I write something much, like, basically, if I ever get the chance, if for some reason people really love these books,
right,
then I would love the opportunity to write a book that was set when the ship first launched. Like, I would love the opportunity to write a book that was set about Agatha's childhood. You know, I'm not somebody who sees a world as being a closed thing. So this is a trilogy, but the world is bigger, and I think there are interesting stories to be told in that world.
Yeah.
And I was interested in those, so I decided that I wanted to explore them if I could. And one of the ways of exploring those was having the person that's there telling the story to Chan, basically. So where Chan's first person narrative is delivered to nobody, essentially delivered to the reader.
Right.
Agatha's sections of first person narrative are delivered to Chan.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, they're stories that she's telling her.
Right.
And that was the only way that I could think of, and this is the other major reason really, in that, you know, one of the things I don't really like doing is info dumps. I don't like doing exposition, blah, blah, blah.
No one likes reading them either.
Nobody likes reading them. So I was like, well, actually, and I fully recognize that sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
If you're doing a reveal about something that happened in the past, there's very few ways of doing it sort of on a technical level. You can either write it as a sort of separate section, which is somehow removed from the bulk of the text itself. You can have a character witness it through, say, a video or reading journal entries or something like that. Or you can have another character tell them about it. And if a character tells them about it in basic dialogue, it tends to feel very expositionary. Whereas if you turn it into a story, if you sort of remove it a little bit and turn it into a story, I hope that it would add a bit more sort of colour and flavour to those chapters, to those sort of reveals and that knowledge. Which really was what drove me to go, actually, Agatha's a really good point of view character to look at as well. It's very different it's not something that I wanted to do from day one. It wasn't like I want to do two narrators in this. It was more a thing that when I discovered that the book needed it, it was the perfect opportunity for me to sort of basically indulge myself.
All right, now you've got, with Way Down Dark, a new publisher, a new editor. Yep. You were with Harper, yep, I think, for the last couple of books, right?
I'm still with them.
You're still with them?
So HarperCollins are handling all the adult stuff. So next year, I've got Next Explorer coming out with them.
Okay. Let's just talk about, we'll talk about what's coming up next a little later. But I want to talk about this sort of change, because when you've been working with the same editors, the same people for a little while, and now you've switched completely, and of course it's a different, you know, you're writing, technically you can be writing whatever story it is that you want to be writing, but it is being marketed at a different age bracket now.
Yep.
Not to say adults don't read young adult, but you know what I mean in terms of, as far as, you know, publicity or marketing goes. How's that change been? How's that change and sort of shift in things been?
Interesting. it's interesting from a few points of view. One, there's a completely separate community of bloggers and fans, which is really interesting. I think that sometimes adult fans of genre fiction, and I am one of these people, have a tendency to be more cynical. Like, we're quite, something's new, and we're like, oh yeah, go on then, prove to me that this is good and worth it, and show me what's shiny and show me what's new. And we're cynical, and we're seeking new things that a lot of the YA fans of fiction so far seem to just be really excited about reading, which is
nice and refreshing.
It's quite different, because I think, you know, with genre, we're like, do you know what, have you read Clark? Because if you haven't read Clark, what are you doing here? Go home and read your Clark novels and then come back. Whereas, like, YA readers tend to be like, oh my god, what's new? Oh my god, what's exciting? Oh my god, give me something I haven't seen before. And they read so much. Like, they read so many books. And that's really fascinating and really refreshing. And just seeing people, like, it's nice as well, not bringing baggage almost. You know, people treat you like a debut to some extent because it's a different marketplace. And that's quite fun and interesting to see. Very few people have read The Machine who are reading Way Down Dark. But then also, you know, somebody last year at YALC, which is a convention in London for young adult books and readers, I did an event at YALC. I chaired a panel there. And afterwards, I briefly mentioned that I had a YA novel coming out, and I met a reader, a really nice girl called Olivia, and she came up to me at the signing table, because I didn't have any of my young adult books to sign because they weren't published yet. And she was like, well, I'll just buy your adult book. So she bought a copy of No Harm Come to a Good Man. And she was like, you know, it's not what she usually reads. And then, like, she tweeted me and was like, this is one of my favourite books that I read last year. I loved it. I'm really so excited for your YA novel now. So, so excited. And, like, that stuff's really awesome. People are coming to books with no baggage, with nothing at all other than, is this going to be cool? Does it sound awesome? Do I love it? So that's been a major difference. Not that, you know, genre fans, adult genre fans aren't like that, because a lot of them are.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I like to think of some of us having the cynical, you know, aspect also, and yet being excited about things. I mean, I might be both somewhere in between.
So cynical.
Yeah.
And then someone goes, oh, Livy Tiddar's got a new album, a new.
Yeah. Oh, no, no, we don't let Livy in studios
to
sing.
Honestly, if Livy had an album coming out, I would be so psyched.
I think you might just have given him an idea now.
Folk ballads. I would be there.
All right, now, having read, of course, a few of your other novels, the adult novels we were talking about, I know that you write a lot about identity, about sort of, you know, a collapse of the world, collapse of society, and your characters are struggling with a sense of belonging very often, trying to figure out who they are, where they stand, you know, what's sort of their albatross, what it is, how can they deal with it. All these things are present in your books, though, of course, you know, I personally find the treatment in each of your books is unique every time. I mean, The Machine, for example, is very different from The Explorer, which is very different from No Harm Can Come to a Good Man. But more so than ever, of course, your treatment is entirely different of these ideas in Way Down Dark. Do you, though, when you start off writing, especially if it's a new project, a new book, do you ever see yourself heading into familiar territory in terms of, say, themes or motifs, and then you tell yourself, no, I have to, you know, find a new way to explore this?
Oh God, yeah, I hate it. I mean, like, I feel I'm always joking, like that things. You know, Jared, who runs Porno Kitch, has got this joke about things being smythed, and he means that things are very dark. I actually think of it in terms of like the themes that I know crop up over and over again, and even I'm like a bit bored of them. I'm like, how many times, James, honestly, can you explore the nature of identity through duality? And you know, I've done it in, I did it in The Explorer, I did it in The Echo, I did it in an inadvertent way in No Harm Come to a Good Man, in that I even put twins in No Harm. I didn't even know I was doing it, and I had two books in a row, The Echo and No Harm, with twins in them. And admittedly, you know, that one set of kid twins is kids, but it's very, it's a thing where I worry about it. I worry about whether, because I'm obsessed with these things. I'm obsessed with, on a sort of personal nature, I'm obsessed with dying. I'm obsessed with the notion of, I'm obsessed with memory, and how memories are fallible. And I'm obsessed with whether we are who we ever think we actually are at any given point in time. I really, things that preoccupy me and keep me awake at night are those three things, that and teeth. And I,
Teeth, yes.
teeth, yeah, they come up in every book as well. And it's something where I worry that, well, I know I'm not going to stop until I've explored it to the extent I want to explore it, which I think is basically the Anomaly books. The Anomaly books, which is The Explorer and The Echo, and there are two more in this quartet, they are basically my opportunity to explore all of the three major themes that I'm obsessed with to a point of them being fractured and broken and unexplorable by me anymore. So I feel like I've got those books until the end of those books to work these things out of my system. I have abandoned books because I feel like they're too ploughing the same furrow,
Right.
which is why Way Down Dark is quite refreshing to me. Like Way Down Dark, I've sat there and I've thought about it, and I'm like, well, there's very little about memory in there, other than the sort of there's a sense of societal memory, but not really personal memory,
Right.
and there's very little about. There's very little about the main character. Chan never really worries about dying. Other people worry about her dying,
Yeah.
but she doesn't worry about dying, which I was an intentional thing. And there's very little in there about identity, I don't think. About also the main character's identity. There were things in there. There was a lot more that was in there. And I was very careful to sort of go, if this isn't needed, if it doesn't add to this, strip it back, strip it back, strip it back. Because I want it to sort of reflect. There's a bit of me that gets excited about like trying to climb a tree, and I'm a dreadful tree climber,
Yeah.
but there's a bit of me that really goes like, oh, I'd love to climb that tree. And that's, I think, the thing that I'm trying to channel in Way Down Dark.
That's interesting.
More than are my teeth all going to fall out tomorrow?
Yeah.
I think, can I climb that tree?
You know, your teeth will eventually fall out.
Shut up.
Yeah.
They won't.
But you may never climb that tree, so you
Oh
know.
God, do you know what? They're going to fall out. I know they're going to fall out. And the worst thing is, as soon as they start, like when I'm old and they properly start falling out,
Well,
I'm
don't
basically going
everyone's
to have
teeth
them.
fall out when they're really old? I mean, it does happen.
Some people get to keep them.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of
Some
people
people
do
keep them.
lose teeth. It happens
Oh
when you get
yeah.
older.
And I basically, what will either happen is I will either be rich enough that I can pay to have implants.
Right.
Or I'll have to have them all out at the same time. I'll have to go along and have them all taken out once they start going
Yeah.
and just have false teeth.
Well, I was going to
Like, I
suggest
can't.
this. I was going to say, I mean, if you're so afraid, you could do that now. You could just have them
Don't.
yanked out and put in a whole bunch of like titanium implants with like new teeth, and then they'd never fall out.
This is not a joke, right? The thought of that makes me feel sick at the
I'm
moment.
sorry. I thought I was being helpful. I mean, that
That
seems.
is
Well, let's move on.
deep.
Let's move on. Let's not talk about teeth anymore. It's that bad.
This interview is over.
No, let's a few more questions. No more teeth. We still have to
Fine.
talk about LaVie's music debut. But so now, yeah, you don't
Would his
think
first single be? Do you reckon if he was to do a cover of something, what
LaVie?
could he
Oh,
cover?
A Total
LaVie.
Eclipse of the Heart.
Oh, totally. It would be this sort of mumbled, weird, avant-garde cover version. It'd be amazing. It'd be a bit. I imagine if LaVie made an album, it'd be like modern Scott Walker. It'd be like the sound of. Please don't hate me, Livy. The sound of a slightly grumpy man in a room hitting things, like murmuring these lyrics to Like quite David Lynchian, you know?
But grouchy.
Grouchy, obviously yeah. Grouchy.
All right, so now you don't obviously hold back with the darkness in any of your novels. I'm really glad you didn't in the YA book either, because I don't think violence in young adult novels is a new thing at all. Even before we started calling them, even before we started calling them young adult novels, I mean, there was still, you know, even I think back to now, I recently read the new Judy Blume and I thought back to, well, Tiger Eyes. Tiger Eyes back then was, we didn't call it a young adult novel, but it was for young adults. And it was about a young girl whose father shot in a grocery store robbery. So it starts off with a violent death. That's again, not a spoiler. That's the whole impetus of the book. So it was happening a long time ago. I don't think it's something new. Of course, things get darker and darker as the world, I suppose, gets darker and darker. Even things like Harry Potter in retrospect. So I don't think violence in young adult novels is something that necessarily scares publishers or writers or even readers anymore. But was there ever a point in, you know, while you were writing this that you felt like there was maybe a silent censor on your shoulder saying, oh, hang on, this is going a little too far?
There are some things that I cut. There were, one of the things that I really didn't want in there was anything that erred towards the gratuitous. So there were some things that bits of violence that in the edit, in one of the various stages of the edits, I would go, okay, maybe that's unnecessary. You know, maybe you don't need to see that. There was one very graphic description that my editor made me take out, which she was right about, I should stress, because when I read it back, I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty grim. But for me, I think a lot of the... So what's really tricky about writing violence is that essentially a lot of the time when you write violence, you're writing action scenes. Writing action scenes is intrinsically boring. Reading action scenes is boring, is even more boring. So what you've got to try and do is write them in a way that means that they're really exciting and they're fast and they get the job done. And you want a lot of the violence to happen off screen or, you know, off page, if that's all. But you know what I mean? You want it to actually be the camera looking away when something's really awful, because we can imagine things and we don't need to be shown them. So it was important to me that the violence was high. What I think's interesting is that I personally think the book isn't as dark as readers think it is, because I think that a lot of it's quite suggested darkness rather than stuff that happens that is really, really dark. Like a lot of people have said, oh, the stuff with the pit, there's this sort of bit at the bottom of the spaceship, which is pretty grotesque, is really, really nasty. But I think I took out in the edit quite a lot of the description of what it's like to go into the pit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, it's just Chan saying, this is awful, this is really horrific.
Well, what works
in that situation is trying to tell, not show. And I know we're told, you know, as writers, show, don't tell. But actually, sometimes you need to tell, not show, because we tell the reader that something's awful and they make it as bad as they need it to be.
What is next to Way Down Dark? Is there a follow-up to this? Do we have a title for the second book?
Yes, there is a title. The second book is, I think this is going to be the first time we actually tell anyone it. Second book is called Long Dark Dusk.
That's interesting.
Long Dark Dusk, which is a title that I cannot tell you anything about at all, as in, I can't tell you where the dusk is, why the dusk happens, why it's long, why it's dark.
But you can,
like that, because all of that would constitute spoilers for book one.
Yes, but you can tell us that it's out next year, I believe.
I can tell you it's out, I believe, in February. Yeah, I think it's February, which is very exciting. And then the third book, which does not currently have a title, in the title is in discussion between me and my editor, is out in October, if memory serves. Next year. So all three, the three of them are, the sequels are out very, very soon.
So what have you been reading recently? Anything amazing? Anything really terrible?
Mm-hmm. I am a judge this year for the prestigious literary award, the Kitschies, which means that I've been doing a lot. Well, I've been doing a lot of 2015 reading anyway. I started this year going, let's try and read only books that are published in 2015. Because I thought that would be a really fun challenge. What an idiot I am. Like, that's an idiotic challenge, which I have stuck to.
But why is it so bad? I mean, I think mostly I've read stuff that's been published this year too.
Because then sometimes you're like, do you know what? I really want to read this book that was published in 2012. And you can't. And I'm like, but it's totally relevant to what I'm doing. And then you're like, but you can't. Because it's against the ridiculous rules you've set yourself. And actually, I've got a plan for next year where I want to propose it to a couple of different outlets to publish. What I really want to do, otherwise I'm doing it myself on my blog, I won't have a year where I do nothing but consume media created in that year or first presented to the public in that year.
Right.
So literally from January the 1st, I want to like not listen to any songs that haven't been created, that haven't been released in 2016.
You're really asking for trouble with the songs.
I really am. It means that for the entirety of January, I'm basically not listening to anything on January the 1st.
Yeah.
It's really odd.
That is.
But I like the idea of being like, what happens if you only consume the media from that year? What happens if I'm not watching any TV that was made 5 years ago, 10 years ago? If I don't watch any of those films? If I don't watch Terminator 2 because I'm bored one day?
Yeah.
What happens if I literally am stuck entirely in 2016?
Well, this is really interesting. Like I'm down with this. I'll do this with you next year.
Will you do it with me?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds interesting. As long as we make sure that LaVie's album comes out on the 1st of January 2016, I am so in there like swimwear.
You see, that's what I reckon. I think it would have really interesting repercussions. I think that you would discover so many things you wouldn't have otherwise found, and probably excuse a lot more things you wouldn't have otherwise excused. Yeah. So this year's been the year of 2015,
yeah.
Which means that I'm currently trying to read all the big American novels of the year. So you know, every year there's three or four great American novels released, yeah, all vying for their place, and they're all like 1,000 pages long.
Well, unless you're Toni Morrison, then it was really short.
Unless you're Toni Morrison, yeah, then it was like 20. But otherwise, they're all like in desperate need of an editor and achingly enormous. And I'm reading those. So I read A Little Life by Hanyu Yanagihara, which is amazing until I stopped buying it. And it all felt a little bit overwrought. But it's some of the best writing I've ever read in my life. I've read the new Jonathan Franzen, which is, you know...
depressing.
No, it's actually really funny.
Really? I'm just convinced he's always depressing. I haven't read his last couple of books.
No, I really like his books. And I really enjoyed this one. And then I'm reading just nothing but huge novels that take me weeks. I'm reading Kim Stanley Robinson's Aurora at the moment.
Right, which is massive.
Which is massive, but also amazing. It's like I saw Adam Roberts, who, if you don't know Adam Roberts, is a sci-fi writer and the finest mind of his generation, talking about it on Twitter and saying that he thinks it might be the best generation ship story ever written. And, you know, I don't think he's lying. It's really something. Like, it's pure, proper, old-school sci-fi. Right. It is for those people for whom, you are really into your hard SF, and it is right there, and it is really, really strong. So that's very enjoyable. Have I read anything bad? Yes, I read some terrible, terrible novels that I am not going to name because I very much like their publishers.
All right, well, you can tell me that off the record. Here's the thing. I've got a couple of questions coming off Twitter. Alex Stora says, "Hi, James, what was your starting point or inspiration behind The Machine?"
It was to some extent, my grandmother, because she was going through she had dementia at the end of her life. And I was trying to think about, I did a lot of research, not in a sort of, I want to save her way, but I was just reading a lot about the things that people try and do to turn back the effects of dementia. And one of the things that people are trying to do is to, you know, change sort of to re-inject memories into the human body. And that got me onto post-traumatic stress, advances in science. And that led me to the novel, really. It was all founded in science, which is a thing.
Speaking of things, what's up with maths? Tim Ward wants to know, how did maths get so powerful and how do you kill it?
Maths?
Yes.
So maths got really powerful because we let it get out of control. There was a period of time in which we should have locked maths down, put it in a cage and been like, up to the number 10, you are fine. You can play. But as soon as you get above the number 10 and as soon as you get into negatives, I think that maths is really out of control.
Yeah, game over there.
Yeah, game over. Like, there's no negatives. If you, incidentally, as a thing, if you really want some fun, ask Siri on your iPhone, what is it? What, 0 divided by 0?
I read that recently, yeah.
Yeah, ask that. It's great.
The Terminator Genesis. What is, why would you want to see this? Isn't it just exactly the same movie again, except with the Game of Thrones star?
Do you know what, though? Right, so it basically retcons the old movies. And I'm all for, like, you know, when Marvel or DC, when they do a retcon and they're like, it's got messy, so let's retcon things. That's fine. Makes sense. Terminator's not messy. Terminator's only messy because basically bad sequels have diluted the original two films' genius. And right. So they're sort of retconning it with a shittier version. What I don't understand, and I apologise if by some chance the writers of Terminator Genisys listen to this podcast, and I apologise to you because I'm sure you're lovely and like, get in touch and we'll have a chat and have a beer and work this out. But why people who fundamentally don't seem to understand what makes a series brilliant fuck around with it and make it shitter when they're writing sequels? It has happened multiple times. It happens with the Alien films, where someone's like, Alien versus Predator, let's write those and make them shit. It happens with Terminator now. It potentially could happen with this. I like Alien 3, right? But you know the new Alien film that's coming out? Seems like it's going to retcon Alien 3.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And to some extent, Prometheus retcons the Alien films anyway. Like, I don't understand this fascination with going back to the well and going, let's change the thing you thought you knew. The thing we thought we knew, we actually knew and we loved it. Stop ruin. Like, it's the equivalent of going, you know when people joke about, like, oh, you pissed on my childhood when people do a remake?
Right.
It's actually pissing on things that we love. It's going, that thing you love, let's make it worse retroactively. Why would you do that?
Well, I assume they think they're appealing to a different generation than, say, you and I. I mean, I'm guessing there are people in the world, there's like 14-year-olds in the world, 15-year-olds in the world who haven't seen the original Terminator. That's possible,
yeah, but
right?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I'm assuming that they do. Like, that there are 14-year-olds who haven't seen the original Terminator, but then why on earth do they want to watch a film that's basically like, so we're going to go back and interact with the original Terminator? But so Back to the Future 2 works perfectly, right? Because yeah. Everyone's seen Back to the Future 1. So when he goes back and he tinkers around with Back to the Future 1's events,
yeah,
you're like, oh, that's really cool because I've seen that film. If you haven't seen that film, then Back to the Future 2 is just a mess. But that's what Terminator Genisys looks like it is. And I just, no. I'll watch it at some point, like, you know, when it's like on television or on Netflix, I'll watch it. And I won't feel bad. I'll basically feel like it's okay because I haven't given them money to support ruining things I love.
So tell me, pick one Prince song that you wish you could sing.
If I Was Your Girlfriend. I can't sing it because it's so high.
Yeah.
I really wish I could sing I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man because it's so exuberant. I'd love to be able to sing that. But I can't. If I Was Your Girlfriend, it's so, so high. And it's like so, because it's even, Prince even like pitch shifted it himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's his falsetto like, and then changed. So it's not natural. Yeah.
So it's so ludicrously high that you just can't sing it. Like, you know, if anyone's like, oh, can you sing a Prince song? The best you can do, like I can get away with singing Sign of the Times because it's basically just like speak singing.
Right.
Which, because at the time, Prince was denying that rap existed, basically.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not rapping, I'm just speak singing. So it's speak singing. So you can just about get away with that. But like, and I wouldn't want to be able to sing Purple Rain because I feel like that's too much of a party trick song. But maybe like Seven Wonders I could do. Or like Alphabet Street would be nice to sing because that's quite simple. But if you can nail that melody. And obviously Kiss would be lovely to be able to sing.
Well, Kiss is what like, I would I pick. Try. But I did say one song.
Okay, so definitely, definitely Girlfriend.
definitely maybe potentially Girlfriend, yes.
Yeah.
It's a good answer. All right, so just to wrap up things, tell me what's next? What's happening in the next 6 months?
So next 6 months, there's lots of events and stuff that I'm doing, and they'll all be up on, I'll talk about them on Twitter. I've got to redo my website. They would be on my website, but I honestly don't keep up with it, so I'm basically going to strip it right back. So what's next in the next 6 months? Change my website. I am going to be finishing the edits on the sequel to Way Down Dark, and also the third book, and also then stuff coming out. I think the only thing out in the next 6 months is Way Down Dark, but then just after that there's the sequel, then just after that there's the third book in the trilogy and also the Explorer 3, or, you know, Anomaly Quartet Book 3, which has a working title but not the proper title, so I can't tell you that. But that's really exciting and that's currently my favourite thing in the world. So if you like those books, then that one's hopefully going to blow your mind because it's really fun and really, really, really crazy. Next year will hopefully be pretty busy. And then I've got a plan. I've got a thing that I really want to write for 2017, which is just the coolest, the most excited I've ever been about a book in my life. So as long as I can basically persuade somebody to publish it, then hopefully I'll be writing that very soon. Because it's so, so, so cool. Honestly, Mahesh, it's so cool. Yeah, this one thing, honestly, I'm so excited. It's so cool. And it's, but it's really time sensitive as well.
Ah, all right. So, well, you better get
which is very rare
cracking.
that that happens in publishing. Very
Yeah.
rare that you have an idea that you're like, I have to publish that before a certain period of time. But it's I think it's really fun. I'm really happy with it.
All right. Well, that's
so, yeah.
Something to look forward to.
Hopefully what will happen as a consequence of this podcast is every publisher listening to it will be like, including my own publishers, will be like, what is that? What is that? Tell me now. Tell me now.
I hope it comes
so,
to that.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, so do I.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Ah, thank you for having me. I always love talking to you. It's always great.